Državni ispitni center.
Maturità generale 2008.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese.
Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi ad un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte. Potrete cominciare a risolvere l'esercizio già durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo illeggibile verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Dopo aver completato l'ascolto e la risoluzione di ambedue le parti A e B della prova, avrete a disposizione ancora un minuto per annerire con la matita sul foglio per le risposte gli spazi corrispondenti alle vostre scelte per ciascuna delle affermazioni dell'esercizio A. Ricordatevi di indicare solamente una scelta per ciascuna affermazione. In presenza di più scelte, infatti, alla vostra risposta verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You're going to hear an interview with an editor about a radio program. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column below and shade in the appropriate circles on your answer sheet. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
Rob Kettridge is the editor of the Documentaries Unit, the department which produced A Stylish Story. I asked him what his team was trying to do with this program.
The serious point of the program was to try and show how the same material, if you like, literally the same recordings, can be used in a number of different ways. How you can take those recordings and you can, by changing the context in which you present them, the tone, the genre, if you like, moving from horror to dream to poetry, you can show that material in a very different light. So there is a serious point behind the programme about how, both in the media but also in literature and in other art forms, by changing the context and the genre, you can change the meaning or at least the resonance of what people say.
Is this the sort of slot that Radio 4 wants to use for experiments?
Well, the programmes broadcast at 8:30 on a Monday evening are programmes which try to tell stories in a different way from the ways in which they're told in other parts of the schedule, and that's often to do with the techniques the programmes use rather than the content. So it's looking at different, perhaps more adventurous, more idiosyncratic, more unusual approaches to telling stories, and to do so in the hope of intriguing and entertaining listeners, and to try different things out. It does characterise the slot.
But in this case, it would appear your hopes have been dashed, because the reaction, certainly for us, is it's not very complimentary, is it? I mean, people driven almost mad. Sheer mental torture is the phrase used by one person. Do you think that it's an experiment that, on the whole, shouldn't have been broadcast?
No, I don't think that, although the responses that you've had from listeners are clearly very thoughtful, very honest ones. The point about repetition was that the repetition was absolutely deliberate in that sense, and it was deliberately breaking a rule which we would normally absolutely adhere to. We would not normally have programmes with repetition like that, or where we seven or eight times in the same programme started to tell a similar story in very similar ways. But that was part of the aim of the programme, to show how, by ringing the changes on how the story was presented, the genre, if you like, in which it was presented, you could see it in a very different light. And we hope that would be intriguing. I just wanted to say that the reason that we chose the story of a child's visit to the dentist as the basic story that we would then ring the changes on was because that is a universal experience. It's something I think most of us can remember, going to the dentist as a child, and it's an experience which has all sorts of different kinds of memories and feelings and emotions connected to it, and that was helpful in terms of trying to present the story in different ways.
But granted that people did, or a lot of people found it desperately tedious, do you think, well, it's an experiment worth doing, but it's certainly not an experiment worth repeating?
It's not to denigrate this programme to say that this isn't something we will be doing again in this way. This was a one-off.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Rob Kettridge is the editor of the Documentaries Unit, the department which produced A Stylish Story. I asked him what his team was trying to do with this programme.
The serious point of the programme was to try and show how the same material, if you like, literally the same recordings, can be used in a number of different ways. How you can take those recordings and you can, by changing the context in which you present them, the tone, the genre, if you like, moving from horror to dream to poetry, you can show that material in a very different light. So there is a serious point behind the programme about how, both in the media but also in literature and in other art forms, by changing the context and the genre, you can change the meaning, or at least the resonance of what people say.
Is this the sort of slot that Radio 4 wants to use for experiments?
Well, the programmes broadcast at 8:30 on a Monday evening are programmes which try to tell stories in a different way from the ways in which they're told in other parts of the schedule. And that's often to do with the techniques the programmes use rather than the content. So it's looking at different, perhaps more adventurous, more idiosyncratic, more unusual approaches to telling stories, and to do so in the hope of intriguing and entertaining listeners, and to try different things out. It does characterise the slot.
But in this case, it would appear your hopes have been dashed, because the reaction, certainly for us, is it's not very complimentary, is it? I mean, people driven almost mad. Sheer mental torture is the phrase used by one person. Do you think that it's an experiment that, on the whole, shouldn't have been broadcast?
No, I don't think that, although the responses that you've had from listeners are clearly very thoughtful, very honest ones. The point about repetition was that the repetition was absolutely deliberate in that sense, and it was deliberately breaking a rule which we would normally absolutely adhere to. We would not normally have programmes with repetition like that, or where we seven or eight times in the same programme started to tell a similar story in very similar ways. But that was part of the aim of the programme, to show how, by ringing the changes on how the story was presented, the genre, if you like, in which it was presented, you could see it in a very different light. And we hope that would be intriguing. I just wanted to say that the reason that we chose the story of a child's visit to the dentist as the basic story that we would then ring the changes on was because that is a universal experience. It's something I think most of us can remember going to the dentist as a child, and it's an experience which has all sorts of different kinds of memories and feelings and emotions connected to it, and that was helpful in terms of trying to present the story in different ways.
But granted that people did, or a lot of people found it desperately tedious, do you think, well, it's an experiment worth doing, but it's certainly not an experiment worth repeating?
It's not to denigrate this programme to say that this isn't something we will be doing again in this way. This was a one-off.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You are going to hear a recording about a school teacher. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in note form in the spaces below. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
Advantaged girls become high achievers. But in her 50s, she was increasingly uncomfortable about the lack of opportunities for children at the opposite end of the social scale. Would it be right, she wondered, to retire without trying that kind of challenge? Her choice, should she gamble with the end of her career and take on a failing school that had gone through 7 head teachers in 10 years? Jill, was this a personal decision about your career, or did it have something to do with what education is for and for whom?
I feel that it was about what education is for, but it's inevitable that it was also for me. If they would have me, because I didn't think they would, because of the general suspicion that's in the maintained sector about people in the independent sector. For all those reasons, I thought, well, if they'll have me, then it would be the most enormous privilege to be able to do it.
Did you go to a private school yourself?
No, I went to a girls' grammar school, and I had a really first-rate education where we were imbued with the sense that we could do anything, that we were allowed to imagine any aspiration for ourselves. I remember going to a debate where a BBC producer was standing up and telling us about what was going on in the BBC, and if you hadn't made it as a producer, by the time you were 30, you were burnt out. And I shot up in the back row and said, but I believe in getting older and wiser. I don't want to stop by the time I'm 30, and he chastised me for my naivety.
You started your career in the state sector in Birmingham. What was that like, and why did you decide to leave it?
I was in another girls' grammar school, but it was in Handsworth Wood. It wasn't in a particularly privileged area. There were a lot of girls there who'd passed the 11 plus, but they were bussed in from very big council estates. And what I've never forgotten, apart from an A-level class of 26, which these days would be considered outrageous, was the huge social mix, which you expect, but the fact that some of the girls wouldn't respond to any normal, reasonable approaches because they were used to being beaten at home. And if you couldn't beat them, then you didn't count. And what I do remember was the huge efforts you had to make as a teacher to find out what would motivate them.
How did that experience form your ideas about education, what it was for, the potential of children?
It told me that you couldn't make assumptions about what they would be like just because of the school they were at, and that as a teacher in those days you were on your own. So you went into the classroom and the door closed behind you and that was it. Nobody checked what I did.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Advantaged girls become high achievers. But in her 50s, she was increasingly uncomfortable about the lack of opportunities for children at the opposite end of the social scale. Would it be right, she wondered, to retire without trying that kind of challenge? Her choice, should she gamble with the end of her career and take on a failing school that had gone through 7 head teachers in 10 years? Jill, was this a personal decision about your career? Or did it have something to do with what education is for and for whom?
I feel that it was about what education is for, but it's inevitable that it was also for me. If they would have me, because I didn't think they would, because of the general suspicion that's in the maintained sector about people in the independent sector, for all those reasons, I thought, well, if they'll have me, then it would be the most enormous privilege to be able to do it.
Did you go to a private school yourself?
No, I went to a girls' grammar school, and I had a really first-rate education where we were imbued with the sense that we could do anything, that we were allowed to imagine any aspiration for ourselves. I remember going to a debate where a BBC producer was standing up and telling us about what was going on in the BBC, and if you hadn't made it as a producer, by the time you were 30, you were burnt out. And I shot up in the back row and said, but I believe in getting older and wiser. I don't want to stop by the time I'm 30. And he chastised me for my naivety.
You started your career in the state sector in Birmingham. What was that like, and why did you decide to leave it?
I was in another girls' grammar school, but it was in Handsworth Wood. It wasn't in a particularly privileged area. There were a lot of girls there who'd passed the 11 plus, but they were bussed in from very big council estates. And what I've never forgotten, apart from an A-level class of 26, which these days would be considered outrageous, was the huge social mix, which you expect, but the fact that some of the girls wouldn't respond to any normal, reasonable approaches because they were used to being beaten at home. And if you couldn't beat them, then you didn't count. And what I do remember was the huge efforts you had to make as a teacher to find out what would motivate them.
How did that experience form your ideas about education, what it was for, the potential of children?
It told me that you couldn't make assumptions about what they would be like just because of the school they were at. And that as a teacher in those days, you were on your own. So you went into the classroom and the door closed behind you and that was it. Nobody checked what I did.
This is the end of section B.
Ora avete a disposizione un minuto per poter annerire a matita sul foglio per le risposte gli spazi corretti dell'esercizio A.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. smettete di scrivere, chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'orlo del banco insieme al foglio per le risposte.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.